Beyond Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Happy Friday morning to you. Well, it's like 6 minutes until noon. Matt Moore, ready to take you into the afternoon and into tonight's games with some basketball discussion. I'm really almost delirious right now. That's how little sleep I've gotten lately. That it's not even like a... I'm not refreshed. I'm hitting that, like, just... I have no idea what I'm saying mode.
You're still not sleeping?
No.
Man.
Well, I was up late last night writing something for A Wolf Among Wolves, and like didn't get to bed till like I probably didn't fall asleep till like 3:30, and then I got up at I don't know 8, and it's just not a lot of sleep, and I woke up a few times during the night, so it was just not an ideal environment.
Well, the good news is at least that you're not entering into All-Star break and then trade deadline. So
yeah, no, I should be. I should be dead in March. I just maybe start making funeral arrangements. Just start pricing caskets. Taxidermy.
I tried to write a taxidermy. We're just going to stuff you.
Yeah.
I could sell copies of that, actually, to people online. Your Twitter followers would buy, like, action figures of a stuffed Zach Harper. Not an action figure of you. An action figure of you stuffed.
Yeah. Just, like, in front of a computer.
Zach Harper rug. I was in 4-point play yesterday, and I sat there and stared at the screen for seriously 25 minutes just watching the cursor blink. I had nothing. I took a 3-hour nap yesterday after I got done and felt more human. I feel better today. I was expecting today to be my really bad day, and instead today's been kind of productive, and I actually feel pretty good. So,
yeah, last night I was like, a couple of things had broken, and we were going to get like the All-Star Saturday participants and like the Rising Stars rosters and stuff like that. And so I was like, oh, okay, I've got like a few things to post. I'll start getting ready. Like they'll slowly unveil everything throughout the hour-long pregame show. And they're like, nope, this is everything right now. I was like, oh my God. And then it was like, hey, the Bargnani Boozer rumor. And it's like, okay, I got to write this. And it's like, oh, by the way, Dwight's coming back tonight. It's like, all right, got to write that. And like, hey, here's the draft with Chuck and Shaq. Okay, I got to write that. Like I wrote like literally like 11... like 11 posts in like 3 hours, and towards the end I was just like, oh my God, like my brain doesn't work anymore.
Welcome to the show. Trade deadline, I've been known to, I do weird things after the trade deadline. My wife's always like, she's like, you get a little weird after the trade deadline. She's like, you're a little weird anyway, but you laid upside down on the bed for a couple of hours, like feet facing the pillows, just kind of laying sideways like you were dead.
Yeah, you gotta
watching the TV half-heartedly last year.
Yeah, you gotta switch up the. That's an underrated thing. Is just to like to take a nap with, like facing the other way on the bed that you're not used to. Like it can kind of change a scenery. You know, like a veteran who needs a trade kind of thing. For March Madness, first week of March Madness, we've decided to go to Vegas as like my little getaway before the playoffs start, and I'm just thinking like, oh my God, that's like 3 weeks after the trade deadline, and like I'm probably gonna go crazy in those 3 weeks just because I'll need that like release, that just step away, and it's not gonna happen right away.
Yeah, here at basketball, we advocate taking much of March off because we're like, you got into trade deadline, nothing interesting happens in March, it's just a death march until the playoffs.
Yeah,
go ahead.
What did you think?
We had some games last night that were...
I wanted to actually ask you real quick. What did you think about, since the games were blowouts, this popped in my head. What do you think about the way they set up the All-Star, like, with the contestants and the teams and stuff? Like, I know we talked about it a little bit, but now we have the teams. What do you think?
I haven't taken a look at all of them yet. It's kind of... I mean, I guess the concept is kind of interesting. I don't know. I think most of the problem is I'm not sure people are going to be aware of it, so it's not necessarily, it's one of those things where it's like, we're aware of it, but not most people, so I'm not sure how to
unless they hammer it home on the broadcast, which maybe they'll do.
They need to like have a scoreboard or something, I guess.
James White, though, I'm excited. Like, I know he's 30 years old, and I know everyone thinks, well, he probably can't do what he used to do. Hey, he probably can't. He's still the best dunker in the world. He still does all of his stuff from the free throw line. Like, that's his whole routine. He might do something from the side a little bit. He's got this incredible, like, it's almost like a windmill with one hand, and then he switches it to the other hand for a windmill in the air. which is phenomenal. But like, I'm excited. This is a decade or more in the making of people wanting to see him in an NBA dunk contest.
We'll do a bigger breakdown next week before you take off for Houston. But you've got a great post actually that people should check out. Basically, Zach breaks down the entire Saturday night slate with video of everybody. So if you want to get acquainted with the guys, if you're not familiar with them, it's a really great post to check out.
Thank you.
There's an argument in the press room last night that the typical, basically, like, the traditional media was like, the dunk contest is stupid, there's nothing valuable, why aren't the stars doing it, I don't know any of these guys. I get really irritated when people say that to me. Like,
yeah.
But especially because some of these guys are guys that have votes on the awards.
Right.
And I'm like, you need to know who Terrence Ross is. Like, you just do. You need to know, be aware of who Terrence Ross is. Because they're like, well, can he dunk at all? And I'm like, oh my God.
Nope, they put him in the dunk contest because he's good at layups.
Right? Finger roll. He's bringing the finger roll to the contest. Fareed is an interesting choice.
Yeah, I was surprised by Fareed.
We'll see what he does, because most of the common thought is he's just a power dunker. He does not like interviews at all, so we'll kind of see. He's not here, and they're gone until the All-Star breaks. I'm not going to get a chance to ask him. The question for me is I want to know whether or not he brings JaVale down to help him out.
Yeah, that would be the way to go. That really would. You know what? I put this in the post because you don't think of him as a creative dunker. But what if he just brought someone out there to try to block his dunks?
Oh, that'd be good.
Like that's what I've wanted for a while, is like some aspect of the dunk contest where you bring out the best shot blockers, but you know there's a risk of injury and guys don't want to be dunked on and stuff.
Yeah, Larry Sanders about broke his back. So.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's just not a good. It's not a good idea in application, but I love the theory behind it. But that would be like a cool little twist of, hey, this guy's legitimately going to try to block my dunk.
I think I'm getting the odds within the hour, and we'll have him up on Ion Basketball here this afternoon. I'm really intrigued about Eric Bledsoe. I feel like like the odds could be good because they always reward the small guys.
The small guys look better doing the dunks because they're small, and he can really get up. Chris Paul, you know, he's saying this, he's his teammate, so maybe he's going to. And he picked him, so maybe he's just going to oversell him a little bit. But he said that he does stuff in practice that's incredible. So, who knows? He might be I put it in the post last night. He might be the dark horse. But it does feel like this is Gerald Green and James White's to win.
This shows you the just level of degenerate I've evolved into since I had to start doing picks against the spread this season, which harkens back to my early 20s days of paying more attention to such things.
Sure.
My first thought when I saw all of the skills competition stuff was not the dunk contest, not the three-point contest. I said, ooh, Damian Lillard, skills competition. That could be like a really nice bet. Like, I bet he's going to get killer odds. I feel like that's like a golden bet. Like, Parker's going to have to be the heavy favorite. I really like Damian Lillard in this thing.
What did you end up getting your Pro Bowl bet in? Did you end up, you got that?
I cover and my prop bets.
Yeah,
for most shots of someone looking bored on a sideline.
Right, and you've wagered on the Grammys, I'm assuming.
How did Brandon Knight get the skills competition?
Gotta have a young guy. I do. You know, I want stars involved in the weekend because it is cool to see them kind of have that competitive nature beyond a traditional game and try to showcase a skill set. But it is good that they are gearing it towards the younger guys. I mean, you know, James White is obviously 30 years old, but he's a young in terms of NBA career. But the rest of the guys, like, you've got a lot of young guys in the competitions, and, you know, they're going to, and rightfully so, they're going to plaster Kyrie Irving all over this weekend. And they should, because he's a star in the making, and he needs to become a national name. But I like that he's involved with every single night, every single day of the weekend. I like that they brought in, you know, guys like Eric Bledsoe and Terrence Ross, and I think it's going to be a really fun All-Star weekend.
I agree. I think my biggest question was just, can Brandon Knight dribble that well? That was where I was going with that. Because, like, I really like Holiday, I really like Teague. I think Teague's another sneaky kind of guy in the skills competition. Lin's going to have too much expectation on him, and I don't think he's fast enough to keep up. I would have liked to have seen Irving in the skills comp.
Yeah, that would have been fun. You think Brandon Knight's just gonna forego the passing drills? He's just gonna he's gonna jack up a shot from there.
Other people have had this idea of having the bigs do it, and I really want to see the bigs do it. Just I want to see one big man just be like, "Screw it," and run through the pylons, knocking them aside like the Hulk running through traffic.
Yeah, let's put Pekovic in it, and he'll just knock them away.
3-point, I'm kind of underwhelmed by, to be perfectly honest with you.
It's weird. They've always like had these weird qualifications for guys getting into the 3-point contest, and yet. You know, Matt Bonner's clearly a good enough shooter. He's only taken, like, 76 three-pointers this year.
Yeah.
He's shooting 42%, but he's only taken 76. Like, it forever it seemed like Anthony Morrow couldn't get into the competition because he didn't shoot enough.
My thing with this, I'm okay with Bonner because some of these are just, like, the fan favorites. Like, oh, Bonner can shoot, put him in.
Right.
Okay, I'm confused. I know Paul George is shooting 39%, and that's great. I just feel like... I've just watched so many Pacers games. I'm really worried that he's just going to go, like, over.
It is funny that I think they even brought it up on the TNT broadcast. It's like, why is Paul George in the three-point contest and not the dunk contest?
Yeah. Ryan Anderson, kind of an intriguing option. We'll see if his shot's fast enough. I just think that Stephen Curry is going to have to be the odds-on favorite. Like,
gotta be.
Heavy favorite.
Yeah. Although, Kyrie. I like him in this. I think he's my pick.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll have to talk about this more next week. But I think I'm going to go with Curry. So
okay.
It should be a good slate. It should be fun. I do agree. It looks like it's going to be pretty fun. I think the thing with the dunk contest, it would be best if you don't have to have all stars. I think you should have all star weekend. You just need one star and then one guy to really challenge him who's unknown.
Yeah.
That's the narrative that would be most compelling.
Right.
And the NBA tends to manufacture everything about all star weekend. So why can't they do that?
I just hope they don't have the whole, like, MC and skits and stuff, which they probably will, but that...
Just let them sit behind the table and commentate, let them dunk.
That's what kills the momentum of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's also distracting. It's like, okay, what are you going to do here? What are you going to do? And it's just like, man, let the guy...
Yeah.
Like, let the guy dunk.
I don't want to know what they're going to do. That was the beauty of... I mean, obviously the dunks were, like, all-time dunks, but that was the beauty of the Vince Carter one. Is there was all this expectation of, oh my God, he could do anything, and then he'd go out there and blow your mind with that reverse 360 windmill. I mean, like just turning the wrong way and like fading away from the basket as he hit the windmill. Like, he would blow your mind, and you're like, oh my God, I never even expected that. When he did the hang on the rim, like if you would have had Kenny Smith asking him, what are you going to do here? And he's like, I don't know, I might hang on the rim with my elbow. Like, that would have blown the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, but when he did it, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, and it takes a second to register of like, wow, that is a basic dunk that he turned into something phenomenal. Like, that's what you want. You want that element of surprise. I don't need a two-minute skit of setup. Just go dunk.
I maintain that Paul George's dunk last year, the glow in the dark,
yeah,
was really underrated. It didn't come across as well as it needed to.
Sure.
Like, basically, he needed to get better gear.
Yeah.
But the dunk itself was really sick.
Yeah, it was.
So, I mean, I think that was my argument last night, and I was talking about it. You know, I was like, look, this is Gerald Green in it. I was like, Gerald Green has the best non-winning dunk. The cupcake dunk, as much as it was a prop, that is the only prop dunk I've ever seen that really impressed me.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it gets better with time.
With time,
I was like, eh.
Yeah.
And I saw it later, and I was like, okay, that's pretty good. And then now I'm like, that was a really great dunk.
You know, the Blake Griffin dunk over the car, everyone was mad at it because he only jumped over the hood and stuff. That's a really underrated dunk as well.
You think so?
Yeah. To have to track a ball, catch it, follow through on the dunk, all while clearing the hood of a car. Like, I know he can jump high, and that's not a lot for him to clear. But to do that in one motion, that's really incredible.
Coordination was cool. I will agree. The pass was great.
Yeah.
But
I think it's the buildup of the whole thing and everyone, you know, it was staged. Like, the whole thing was staged and it was set up for him to do that. And JaVale got screwed and DeMar DeRozan got screwed. And, you know, I agree with all that. And I think that's why it took away, because people felt like this is, you know, professional wrestling and not a dunk contest.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what took away from it, but that's a really incredible dunk.
I turned into apparently dunk guy last night because all the media is just amazed I remember all these dunks, and I'm like, it was like 2 years ago. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Because honestly, DeRozan's East Bay Funk remix was really good.
It was sick.
It was really good.
That's a sick dunk.
All right, let's talk about some games that were blowouts.
Absolutely. Lakers.
So tell me about Celtics Lakers because I listened to it in the car and was listening to Dr. Jack Ramsey on the broadcast. He was great.
Oh, he's so good.
It was like the Celtics got a little lead, and then I was listening to his halftime. I was like, oh, the Celtics got a little bit more of a lead, and then I go and I come back in the third quarter and was like, what happened?
Floodgates. The Celtics went on this run that, I mean, there was a sequence where Anton Jameson gets his layup blocked by Jeff Green. And they come back down the floor, and you look off towards the left of the screen, which is near half court, and as soon as he's crossing half court, Paul Pierce is screaming at his teammates to get him the ball. Like, screaming. Like, you could tell he smelled blood, and he wanted to finish the job. And the momentum was completely in Boston's favor, and he's just dying to get the ball. They finally get it to him. He takes a horrendous three-point shot, but knocks it down because you knew he was feeling this. He knew that the Lakers were about to break, and he wanted to break them. And he knocks it down and goes nuts, and the place goes nuts, and the Lakers called timeout. And that was the dagger. But that whole sequence of time, like, it was cool to see him realize, hey, we can end the game right now, and I want to do it. And it wasn't a good shot, but it was he could feel the momentum. He could feel everything. That was a cool sequence that just buried them.
This is the thing with Pierce is – it's not just that he's going to have games like this. He's going to have months like this. Like, I've been talking about how bad Pierce has looked this year, and he has.
Yeah.
He's going to have stretches like this where he's still the guy.
Yeah, he has stepped up incredibly since Rondo went down.
And I watched one of his layups last night in the late third when they were running him out, where he just, like, you know, it's that one where right side wing, and he does a spin move in and then spins back the other way.
Yeah.
Like, his footwork.
Oh, is clinical.
Like, the forwards in this league just need to learn that kind of footwork because it's just amazing to watch.
That's where someone like you look at Paul George, who's mm-hmm. becoming a really good player. But if he just studied Paul Pierce's footwork for a summer or whatever and worked on that, it would open up his game so much because Pierce has never been that athletic. You know, he's got that sneaky athleticism, but he's never been a guy that just blew by people. He's always relied on footwork and positioning. And if you can give an athlete that kind of ability, it just, you know, they destroy.
Are the Lakers done? They're fine. They're like on a five-game winning streak. Now are they done? I don't know how to react to that game.
I think it was just a bad game. I mean, I know they've been having a lot of bad games this season. I feel like I've said that a lot, but
they are a bad game.
That's an excellent point that I can't refute. I don't know. They'll have to adjust without knowing Powell isn't around, and the whole Dwight toss-up right now is kind of weird. But
that's an ugly situation. I feel like, you know, I know the Lakers fans don't want to perpetuate the drama, but I feel like the bloggers are underrating it. Like, well, you know, Kobe didn't really say anything that bad. I'm like, no, look. Like, you have an ongoing dispute in public through the media between the two biggest stars on the team.
Yeah.
Clearly and evidently, and through several altercations over the last year, do not like each other.
Question for you. Do you think Dwight was wrong in his comments?
No.
I agree. I think... You know, it's easy to poke fun at him, which I did, and it's easy to say, like, oh, see, he doesn't care about the team, blah, blah, blah. This is, you know, yes, he's made a lot of money in his career, but this is a serious thing. Like, he cannot become damaged goods, and I respect his right to make sure he's healthy before he goes on the court.
I like competitiveness. I like dedication to your teammates. I like sacrifice. This is real world stuff.
Yeah.
And in the end,
this is seven strangers in a house.
Yeah. You can talk about all you want about how championships are forever and legacy and everything else, but financial security is real life stuff. That's paying bills for people and his family down the line.
Yep. I mean, generations. And you can say, yeah, he's made a lot of money. How many players have blown hundreds of millions of dollars in pro sports? You know, it's not something you can just say, oh, you know, that happens, but it's something they have to be conscious of.
So I don't blame him at all. I think that to me, it's not even so much a matter of I don't even necessarily blame Kobe for it, because I think for Bryant, this is not about this issue. It's about everything. It's
sure.
about what
oh,
is your
absolutely.
Approach to this team? What is your approach to this game? What is your approach to getting me ring number six?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and I think that in a way, they're both right in the situation.
And it speaks honestly to a generational gap, though, because
oh, for
there
sure.
is this gap between Bryant and Pierce and Garnett, who came up in the trash talk, hate one another, you know, remnants of the Jordan era. Now it's considered old school, you know, very much approach. And then Dwight Howard is very much a member of the AAU,
yep.
buds with everybody, you know, make your money, do, you know, build a brand, all that stuff.
And LeBron and Durant have, you know, came up in the same system as Dwight in the same era, and they've managed to kind of separate themselves, but they're also all-time talents, you know? And not that Dwight isn't necessarily, but it's easier in their position to kind of find that happy medium than it is for someone who relies so much on the rest of his team and the rest of the game of basketball and the system to do what he does, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know if this is I will say I don't know if the situation is going to work, because part of it is the Lakers have always made it clear that the organization is bigger than any one player. That includes Kobe Bryant. It includes Magic Johnson.
They proved it with
Nobody
Shaq.
Nobody is bigger than the organization. The Lakers are a brand in and of themselves.
Yep, they proved it with Shaq. Big time.
But, if Kobe Bryant goes to them and says, I can't win a title with him, that's going to put them in a very big bind.
Yep.
It's going to put them in a serious bind, because, you know, I don't think that they're in a situation where they would be like, well, you know, I don't think you can trade Kobe's contract at this point. You know, who's taking $30 million?
that's a lot of contract to match up.
You know, there's really nobody you can send him to that's a contender. There's just not. There's just nobody that has the enough money to send back. It
yeah.
doesn't exist. So you can't trade Bryant. And if you can't trade Bryant, and you don't want to trade Howard, you're in this kind of thing, or you're just kind of stuck, and that's going to create a lot of problems. But I'll tell you, Bryant's been really good about actually being pretty calm and reasonable with the media this season. You know, and he said yesterday in a pregame show, he said, we are going to make the playoffs, and we're going to make some noise. And that's still possible. But
yep.
if they don't, like, he is not going to accept this. This is not how he's going out.
I wrote on Hardwood Paroxysm, I believe a couple years ago, wondering how Kobe Bryant would go out when the situation is no longer favorable for him. And I kind of likened it to a zombie movie in which the main character leaves himself with a bullet in the chamber, and they can either go out using it on themselves, or they can go out with one final shot at the zombie before they like tear him apart. But you know, either way, the guy's got to go. And I've always looked at him as a, no, I'm taking one more shot at the zombie.
Is there another option for shoots the person that put him in the situation to get eaten by zombies?
There might be.
Because that's what they were leaning towards. I really would like to have been on the plane yesterday to see how he reacted to that game.
Ooh, that would have been.
He handles a lot of these losses. He's like, eh, like the one in Denver. He's like, eh, there was another one they lost. He's like, they're like, ah, it's just a bad game. That one bothered him.
Yeah, that's a nationally televised game against the rival. You know, he cares about as much about NBA history as any current player. That's one he doesn't want to lose, and let alone get blown out.
Yeah, against the Celtics team without Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, and credit to the Celtics. I mean, we're talking a lot about the Lakers here, but Celtics they've adjusted themselves like quite well. They
play better the worse they get. I've been saying this.
I mean they've adapted to the injuries. I would say like no other team has this season. A lot of teams have suffered injuries, and you see them trying to fight through it. But they've adapted, and that's a lot of that is the veterans on the team, and a lot of that is Doc Rivers. I don't think he is a great X's and O's coach overall on offense, and I think he's more of a spur of the moment, hey, I'm going to drop this play to get us a bucket kind of thing than having a great system that he can tweak here and there. But he's adjusted what they do perfectly so far.
Yeah, he really has. You gotta give him a lot of credit. We'll see, you know, what they can do.
Yeah,
but it's a pretty steep hill to climb. But they're not going down without a fight.
Right.
Bulls didn't want to go down with that fight.
They didn't have a choice. There was no way for them to stop what the Nuggets were doing last night. The Nuggets just had too much energy, too much almost like foresight or clairvoyance with what was unfolding ahead of them. I mean, every move they made was correct.
I asked Carl pregame, I was like, how do you like the Kenneth Faried on Carlos Boozer matchup? He paused for a long time. He said, well, I think in general, I told Kenneth that if he wants to be successful in this game, he's got to run.
Yeah.
On every play. He's got to run as hard as he can. And I kind of thought, well, yeah, but what's that really going to do? Turns out it does a lot.
Yep.
Turns out running does help when you're Kenneth Faried's freakish athleticism, because he just outworked them entirely. Of course, Carl neglected to mention that he was going to put Faried on Noah, who was banged up, and put Kofas and Kuvas on Boozer. But anyway, yeah, I mean, Joakim Noah wasn't at all healthy, but God, Kenneth Faried, when he plays like that, it's just out in front of the break, dunking it, getting back, swatting the ball, creating steals, wreaking havoc, bodying guys, giving fouls, diving for balls, getting out in transition, finishing inside. Like, he really is. As much as there are things in his game in terms of his savvy and awareness and skill set that are lacking, Faried just makes up for it with the level of energy and intensity, which is, he's one of the top five energy guys in the NBA.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm someone that is very much into checks and balances with the Faried image, amongst fans. Like, everyone's like, oh, this guy's a star. I'm like, whoa, calm down. Like, he's a fine role player. He could become a really good player. But right now, like, let's not overreact. But last night, even though he missed a shot and missed a free throw, he had a perfect basketball game. For what he does, for what they need him to do, he was absolutely perfect on the court.
Well, additionally, I've been a guy that went a little bit too far where I was saying, well, he's really got these defensive liabilities and all these things. And I'm kind of to the point where I'm like, everything he gives in those other areas far outweighs any sort of limitations that he has. Like, there are tactical issues that you have to accommodate for, yeah. But it's never a situation where you're like, you can't really rely on him, or you can't really trust him, or you can't really build around him. He's a guy you can build around because he just will work harder than you. He will work harder than everyone. And it's really admirable. I think it's really fun to watch, too. It's fun to be there when he does stuff because the crowd just goes berserk.
Yeah.
But that beyond Manimal, you and I talked about this before we started recording. That's the model for what this Nuggets team wants to be.
Yep.
Defend, create turnovers, push it in traffic, get layups, get alley-oops, Wilson Chandler knocking down threes, Gallo hitting threes, Ty Lawson getting to the rim, JaVale McGee put back dunks, the whole shebang. That was the team that they, that when you think, how good could this team be? Well, if this and this and this happen, it turns out you blow out the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah.
Noah wasn't 100%. They're obviously tired. They're banged up. Heinrich was out. But putting up 124 on Thibodeau's defense under any circumstances is really impressive.
Yeah, that's a lot of points to put on anybody, let alone the Bulls' defense.
Tibbs was great post-game, too. He was just like, they came out in the third quarter and just smoked us.
Yeah.
And then, they asked him about Kenneth Faried. He was like, the first half, he just kicked all of our asses.
Yep.
Just kicked them.
Yep.
Anyway, and he's a grousey guy anyway, but he was very, like you tell, he was just very much like, I don't even have tactical stuff to tell you. I don't even have things I can tell you about what they did. They just beat the crap out of us.
Yeah, that's an effort thing. And you understand Chicago not being able to bring it all every night, but that was a night where they could have used a lot more effort because Denver had it.
Yeah. And so now in Denver, now people are starting to pay attention.
A little bit. It. What's funny is these two teams both have kind of trade rumblings.
Yeah.
Over the last day, there was the reported exploratory talks between Toronto and Chicago about a Boozer for Bargnani deal, and then Andre Miller. Some rumblings that he might not be happy. Might want to be traded.
There are some rumblings. Some bitch just went out and said it to a reporter. He's impossible to track down, by the way. He's really hard to get a hold of.
Those veterans are sneaky getting out of there now.
He leaves the court early during games. Like, clock's still running, goes to the back, and then, I mean, I'm serious. He sneaks out a back door as soon as the media's let in. That's what he did last night. And I almost caught him to ask him about it. But I was like, I've got other stuff I need to do. But, you know, he openly says, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be here. He says, you know, I want more minutes. I don't want to finish my career this way. And he also says, you know, he said, this team, he's like, we're a fine regular season team, but not only can we not win a championship, but I don't even know how we're going to do in the first round without a marquee player.
Right.
Which, like, it's okay for him to, it's not that he's not accurate, but we talked about this yesterday with the honesty versus tact thing. What does it tell Ty Lawson, Danilo Gallinari, Andre Iguodala? Andre Iguodala, who he's played with a long time, and Iguodala has nothing but the highest respect for Andre Miller and constantly, you know, compliments him. For George Karl, who, there are games where Corey Brewer outplays him five times over, and yet Karl goes out of his way to compliment Andre Miller. And Miller just threw that entire team under the bus. So, yeah. You know, it's a weird situation. I don't know why he resigned. He told Chris Thomason of Fox Sports Florida, he told Thomason last summer, I want to sign with a contender. And I don't want to be a backup. Okay, that's great. Try and find yourself something. You know, maybe the best thing would probably be take a veteran's minimum, go play for the Heat. Chalmers will eventually fall out of the rotation because everyone hates him. And then you can start on the Miami Heat. But he didn't do that. He won the money. So he signs this 3-year, $12 million deal because Denver loves him and appreciates him.
Yeah.
And now he's complaining. And it's like, well, I don't know who's going to be. Boston's an intriguing option, though.
You know, based on like what you said about the contract just now, it is hard to pass up that money for guys, especially veteran guys who don't, you know, he doesn't have a lot of 3-year deals left in it. That's a lot, you know, that's a lot of money to pass up. So I get it from
about this yesterday too, though. He's under that's great, but he signed a contract. Like, you know, what you're getting into.
Sure.
It's not like you can come into the season with the Nuggets and be like, oh no, they're going to have a marquee star because they're going to magically create one in a lab.
But that's also a thing where that's part of the game in the NBA or in pro sports in general. You can sign a contract, spend a little time, and then say, I'd kind of like to move on with my contract. It's part of the game.
Yeah, I just, you know, for me, it's more a matter of that locker room's got pretty good chemistry.
Yeah. No, that's an important thing is him finding a balance, a very delicate balance between maybe trying to get out of there to fulfill criteria that he has for the rest of his career right now and not making everyone be like, what the hell's wrong with you?
You know, and Ty Lawson's not complaining because he's having to share minutes and play off ball when Andre Miller's on the floor.
Right.
You know, like, Andre Iguodala's not complaining about not having the ball in his hands or getting touches. Like, nobody else on that team's complaining. I mean, if they're doing it, they're doing it internally.
Yeah.
Now, I asked Wilson Chandler the other day if he was happy, and he was like, yeah, I'm pretty happy here. It's fine. I think Chandler probably, you know, would probably rather go to Charlotte and score 40 points and get himself a better contract for next time he's up. But for right now, everyone on that team's doing okay, and it just seems really weird that they're playing their best basketball, too. And he even said, he was like, well, if we were losing, I'd be complaining a lot more. And it's like, oh, good for you. Good. Congratulations.
It's good to know you're holding back.
Andre. Well done. You're not going to complain because they've won 8 in a row. Okay.
That's veteran savvy.
The Boston option, I think, is kind of interesting, though.
Yeah, for what? Like Courtney Lee?
Courtney Lee or Jason Terry, either one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know that I like that for Denver.
Denver, the issue is they lose their point guard.
Yeah.
And I don't think Carl's ready to start Julian Stone, or not start, but have Julian Stone be the backup point guard.
Yeah.
It's been hard because he wants to go to the dual point guard rotation, but they've honestly been better with the bigger lineups. Their Brewer, Gallo, Iguodala's plus minus is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because they just, it's just too much length and athleticism to counter. So it's kind of an interesting option for them. The Bargnani Boozer thing is, it makes, everyone's kind of like, oh, that makes sense. You know, it's like, oh, Chicago's cheap. Yeah. Saves them $5 million. That makes sense. How much do you think Thibodeau hates that idea?
Oh, he would not like it. I mean, he would deal with it, but, you know, Carlos Boozer is someone that fans don't really like having on their team. it seems like. Like, when he decided to leave the Jazz fans were not broken up at all.
Yep.
And instantly, Bulls fans pretty much turned on him within the first couple months, especially after the playoffs. And but at the same time, he communicates on defense. He, you know, he can rebound. He's giving effort out there, I would say, that you've had, fair or not, you've had questions about Bargnani's passion and effort for playing the game, which that's a tough mentality for Thibodeau to deal with.
I just imagine Thibodeau being like, I got Boozer to be a good defender. You were trying to make my job harder? Like, have I not done enough for you? Why do you not love me?
I think he's a guy that can work with guys who have that outgoing passion, that overt passion for wanting to do stuff, which I think Boozer has. Maybe he isn't capable of coming through on that, at least consistently, but he has that passion. Bargnani, you know, I don't like killing the guy. I think he's better than people give him credit for, but that is a valid question, I think.
The other part of it, though, I wonder, part of it's been, you know, he's routinely benched Boozer in the fourth to go with Gibson. He used to bench Noah, too, and go with the Sheik, but the Sheik's now in Houston. You wonder if he could just, you know, have Bargnani go out there, provide some offense, and when things get tough, bring in Gibson, Noah, and grind it out.
Yeah.
That might work.
Maybe.
I mean, they're having a hard time moving from Hamilton. It's kind of the other move that's – the other part of it that's quietly getting spread is that they can't find a taker for him, which is interesting.
I mean –
everyone's just like, nope.
Yeah. Watching him play over the last year or two, he's not good.
Well, it's odd because with the contract status, you would think that a team – I still think this will probably happen at the deadline, that a team will just be like, oh, okay. You're, you know, like Charlotte or somebody will just be like, okay.
I feel like you got to give up a future first for him, protected heavily, but still a future first. To get rid of him.
Maybe they can. You know what they should do? Just trade him to Charlotte and give Charlotte back its pick.
Yeah.
That's what they should do.
It's not a bad idea.
Just trade him to Charlotte and say, you can have your pick back. And Rich Cho would be like, done.
Yep. Take that in a second.
Take that gun off my head.
Yeah.
Done. Fine. You know, and it's will the Bobcats pick have more value eventually? Yeah, but, you know, look, you got Derrick Rose, and Rose is now getting to the point where he's entering his, you know, NBA middle age, coming off knee surgery, we'll see how he does, but he's going to be entering that, I guess, pre-prime is what we consider at the 25 to 28 range.
Sure.
And when he enters that era, you want to start surrounding him with veterans. You don't want to be screwing around with young talent, so don't worry about all the other stuff.
Although I wonder if that age range for prime has to be adjusted now because so many guys come in earlier. I mean, I'm sure this has been discussed before, but maybe prime is like 25 to 29, 25 to 30.
I mean, I think if you want to talk about it, like, it just depends on how long you think a prime can be. I still think that, to me, logically, it would be 25 to 28, right? Where,
yeah, you would think.
They're at their athletic peak thing.
Yeah, that's like that cross-section between understanding the game and athletic peak.
But I've also noticed that between 28 and 31, they just pick up so much knowledge. Like, there is a huge jump, I think mostly because 25 to 28, they're kind of getting used to the fame that they've accumulated.
Yeah.
And that's when a lot of struggles come in. I mean, look at what, you know, James is 27, but look at what James is doing now, where he's picking up all this extra stuff, and he seems more focused. It seems, honestly, like he's been successful. He's made this, become this icon. Now he's like, okay, I want to win. I want to win all the time.
Right.
You know, Rose is 24, so he's just entering that. I just think that they're going to want to start looking for veterans and not necessarily screw around. So that, you know, maybe the pick's expendable.
But how do you factor being humble into prime? Because that might accelerate it.
Humble prime.
Yeah.
KD's always been a humble prime.
KD, if this isn't his prime, good God.
Yeah, that's the terrifying thing.
That is terrifying.
Rose isn't as – Rose, here's the thing. I don't think Rose is as humble as everyone acts like. I just think that's a lie.
I think he's just quiet.
Yeah, he's just quiet. He doesn't interview well is how I take it. Like, he's a poor interview.
Yeah.
Well, his part is like he loves his mom, and it's like, look, I was at the game last night. JaVale McGee loves his mom.
I think JaVale's love is more of like a – if I don't love her, she's going to murder me.
She was clowning him last night, too, in the hallway. It was really funny.
She's great.
She is pretty hilarious. Trade talks, I'll tell you, I think it's gonna be an active deadline, if nothing else, just for talks. We're going to be busy just with talks.
Yeah.
Even if no deals come through, it's going to be a lot of volume. I will say, I heard something interesting last night from, what's the term I'm supposed to use here?
Sources.
No, hold on. It's not that one. It's the, a league source.
A league source with knowledge of the situation.
A league source with knowledge of the situation.
Yeah.
Told me last night, who happened to be in town, that Utah is really impossible to predict. That despite their indications that, I don't know what to do because I've had to write up reports on Allen Jefferson getting traded and Paul Millsap getting traded. But they're going to keep Jefferson, trade Millsap, and then they're going to trade Millsap and keep Jefferson. I don't know what to do. And he's like, look, Utah keeps everything really close to the vest. And honestly, it hurts their ability to make a trade. They've wanted to make deals late a couple of times, but they are so close to the vest that teams don't even know that they're shopping until it's too late.
Yeah.
So he's like, that's kind of the deal. You probably will not hear the reality of the Jazz thing until it happens. Like, that's what happened with the Darren Williams thing. It just kind of happened. Just snap. So it'll be interesting. What we got for games tonight?
You know,
that's right. You and Royce are at games, and I have another 12 games I have to keep track of.
You know what I wouldn't trade?
What?
This slate of games for anything. That was just professional work right there.
That's nice, and that's awesome, and that's a great line. I would trade this game for a night off anytime. Because I've been working like 6 days straight, and I'm a little crazy at this point.
Yeah, I got Melo's in town.
Oh, yeah, you got the Knicks.
Yeah, I'm excited. I love watching Melo in person.
You get Raymond Felton in person. That's what I'm excited about.
No, I love watching
two roles of the world.
I love watching JR. I love watching Melo in person. Like, those are two guys that I will probably just kind of get lost watching them off ball, on ball, whatever.
You're the gunner.
I love me some gunners.
Some weird lines, too. There's some weird, weird, weird lines tonight.
I believe you tweeted that the Wizards are giving points?
Giving a point and a half to Brooklyn.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Somebody said that the public's coming in heavy on Brooklyn, which makes sense.
Yeah.
It opened at Wizards plus 2.5, so I'm really wondering if we're going to hear, oh, by the way, Darren Williams is out.
Yeah.
Oh, Brook Lopez has a foot, because this is what always happens, where I'm like, this line's really weird, and then in the middle of the afternoon, or an injury that no one else has heard of, oh, by the way.
I know this isn't true, because it's just not how the industry works, but I never think of a lot of people betting on basketball. Like, I don't think of that as a thing. So when I hear, oh, the public's coming in heavy on this team for a basketball bet, I always think, like, eight guys showed up to the window and made a bet.
Eight Nets fans.
Yeah. Brooklyn, they're like, holy crap, we need to adjust this.
Eight guys in Jay-Z's Rockaware shirts showed up. This is another one. Hawks are giving 4.5 to the Hornets at home.
Yeah, I like that.
You like Atlanta there?
I think I do.
New Orleans, I
think it's a weird matchup for New Orleans.
Yeah, I guess they don't have anybody that can guard Horford.
Yeah.
Alfred Aminu versus Josh Smith might be fun.
Sure.
Vasquez versus Tia. Alamino's been good. Teague Vasquez will be entertaining.
Yeah, that'll be good. Until, you know, Devin Harris ruins everything, assuming he's
healthy. And the Hornets have shooters.
Yeah.
I think I picked the Hawks, but I kind of want the Hornets. Interesting there. Another Pepto whiskey game for me. Warriors-Grizzlies. Grizzlies are given 3.5.
What I don't like about this line is the Warriors have been so bad lately.
Yeah.
Defensively, you kind of feel like they're going to have a monster game.
Yeah. They're going to take some frustration out and get things right.
And they're getting 3.5.
Memphis has been so bad.
Yeah.
Memphis is chemically unsound.
Both teams have been really bad. It's a crap off.
They are not the blue meth.
No.
They're not chemically sound.
Not at all.
Should not make drug references about Memphis. It's not okay.
No, you're just making Breaking Bad references.
Here's another one. Standing outside the locker room last night, waiting for Thibodeau, because Thibodeau was like 20 minutes late after that game.
Yeah.
And somebody He's like, God, what's taking so long? And I real quietly said, well, have you seen Breaking Bad? And they're like, yeah. I was like, you know how long it took Gus to take off the suit for the box cutter? Same kind of deal here. Bobcats are getting 6.5 versus the Lakers tonight.
I kind of like the Bobcats.
You kind of like the Bobcats. And I don't even know who's starting from Charlotte anymore. I got no clue.
No, doesn't matter. I mean, the Lakers can't defend the pick and roll, and the Bobcats are really good scoring out of the pick and roll with ball handlers.
Yep.
I kind of like the Bobcats there.
Dwight's a maybe to play. We'll see if he goes. He honestly should probably set this one and see if they can win it without him.
Yeah.
Because
Well, no, I disagree. If he's
win this one and then rest versus Miami,
I think you have to take the guarantee, or it's not a guaranteed victory for them at this point. But we kind of got in that discussion when the whole Popovich,
The Popovich guy.
I think you make for the easier games. I think you make sure you get wins, especially if you're the Lakers right now.
Yeah, take this one and then see what happens with Miami.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
That's what
the big one of the night is: Clippers Heat.
Might be healthy.
Here's a list of players who might not play in Clippers Heat tonight. Ray Allen, sick. Dwayne Wade, sick. Chris Bosh, still sick, who gave Dwayne Wade and Ray Allen their sickness. Chris Paul, knee. Jamal Crawford, I assume his wrist is sore from shooting so much. Chauncey Billups, Billupsness.
The way you delivered that, Chris Bosh gave the sickness to Wade and Allen. You watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yeah.
You remember the mailroom episode? That's how I figure you like determining who gave who the sickness, like where the mail's coming from, who's it supposed to go to. That's the illness that Chris Bosh passed out.
In other news, on CBS tonight, there's a delightful slate of comedy. But Heat are giving 4.
Yeah,
should be entertaining regardless, just because there's so much athleticism and the team's pretty deep. Clippers need to get a win, they need to kind of stabilize themselves.
That I can't get over that jump ball play.
I think Miami's starting to round into shape defensively.
Yeah, I watched that Dwayne Wade pass about 100 times in a row. I can't get over it. Like,
he just rears back.
I wrote about it. I wrote like a stupid little breakdown of it. And it was like, you know how Eddie House used to shoot before he even caught the pass? Like, that's what that pass was. Like, he was throwing it before he even put a hand on it. It was great.
Houston is giving 7 to Portland. I'm real nervous about that.
That's a lot of points.
I mean, Houston's at home. They've been playing better. And Portland's kind of realized who they are. And they're not in the home of the chaos engine. But 7's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot of points.
The over-under is 210.5.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I would take the under.
Yeah.
I think that could be a secretly, like, ugly game.
Yeah. Like, I think it's going to be in the hundreds, but, like,
210 points, that's a lot of points.
That's a lot of points. Some of this, not probably going to be a lot of points. Well, maybe. The Raptors score a lot. Pacers are giving 7.5 to Toronto.
I'm actually excited about this. I want to see Rudy versus Paul George.
Paul George. And then you got Amir versus David West. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
And then you got
Jonas Hibbert.
You got Allen Anderson versus DJ Augustine.
Excuse me, I have to clean up all this vomit that is in front of my computer now.
And man, this is actually the game for you, man. George Hill versus Lowry.
Ooh!
George Hill versus KLE.
I may have to skip this Wolves game tonight and stay home and light a couple of candles, put on a little smooth jazz, open a nice bottle of red wine, and watch me some George Hill versus Kyle Lowry.
Just imagine incense burning.
Yeah. Just, my lady friend walks in, she's like, oh, what's going on tonight? I'm like, get out of here! I've got plans.
Not everything's about you.
Yeah, I've got plans. Get out of here. Go watch a movie. Here's some money. Go buy yourself dinner.
Maybe instead of KLOE, this one should be called KLACN. Kyle Lowry actually cares now. That's what this Raptors era should be called.
He got someone he likes playing with. Now he cares.
Your Wolves are getting six against the Knicks. I'm taking the Knicks.
Yep. I don't know that Kirilenko's playing. He probably isn't. And no Kirilenko versus Carmelo. That's a bad recipe.
We talked about Kevin Love yesterday, and apparently he is scheduled to be back. He said he's still on pace for late March, just about where we said.
Yeah, he's hoping sooner, but I think they're making sure he, because he came back so early last time, I think they're being very careful about estimates. I would guess mid-March, from what I heard.
He also apparently said that he wishes the fans would realize he wants to stay here.
Yeah, because he's tired of getting asked about that. Because when he tweets out a gift watch from a friend of his, a friend of his gives him a watch, and he takes an Instagram of it, and he just happens to place it on a Jerry West book that he's reading, who, Jerry West, friend of his father's, NBA legend, and then people start saying, oh, he's hinting that he wants to go to the Lakers. This is something we have to get into. He's not the Riddler. He is not walking around in a question mark suit, throwing out little clues, trying to foil Batman. This is not what he is. Like, he's not the Riddler. He is simply a fan of NBA history, a fan of family friends, and a fan of the watch he was displaying. He tweeted out about how, like, on this day, a couple days ago, like, on this day in 1960, whatever, Bill Russell had 51 rebounds in a game. That's incredible, or something along those lines. And I started wondering, like, I wonder if people are going to start saying, oh, see, he wants to go to Boston. He wants to be a Celtic. Like, this is ridiculous.
Please Photoshop him in Riddler gear.
I've already got it ready. I may buy him a Halloween costume of the Riddler and just say, hey, put this on.
Just put it on right now.
This means nothing, but he had been in New York after his hand surgery and was being monitored in his like early rehab and healing by the doctor who did the surgery. And so he just came back to Minnesota to be with the team. I think Wednesday night was his first like game back of being here. And he looks like he's in really good shape. Like, he looked lean, which is nice. Like, who knows if he has any strength buildup because he can't really lift. But he looked lean, at least, and that's not how he looked last time.
The Bulls are on back-to-back. Usually teams have to do the Utah-Denver back-to-back. Instead, they've got Denver-Utah. They're in Utah tonight. Jazz are always tough at home. They're giving four to Chicago. Chicago's got to be pissed off.
Yeah, I still might like Utah there.
I think the Bulls just need to get to the All-Star break. Get to the All-Star break, recalibrate, get rested, get healthy, get Rose back, start kicking ass.
Yep, I agree with that.
The Pistons are only getting five from San Antonio.
I might like...
Spurs line's been weird for the last month.
Yeah, I like the Pistons have been playing some close games here and there. I might take the Pistons to lose but cover.
I'm gonna go ahead and get the points just because I think San Antonio, you know, this is one where it's like, oh, this one might be close. Which San Antonio is usually like, oh, you think so? Do you? Is that what you think? Is that your response? Okay.
Yeah, there
are games where they should like absolutely destroy them. That's when they tend to sometimes be like, man, we'll screw around for a little while.
Yeah. Also, they're on that rodeo trip and they're kind of surgical on that trip.
They're pretty good. They gear up the thing. Which, you know, good for them, by the way, to not, you know, it'd be an annual, oh, let's throw to a road trip really hard. Like, good for them for not making excuses.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's it's easy and it's fun for them to rally behind and kind of band together for that. Like, that seems like a thing, especially with that group and with the way Popovich is and the organization is, that's an easy thing probably to sell your guys on, like, hey, let's have fun on this trip and let's really, like, show people that it doesn't affect us. Game of the night.
Your Cleveland Cavaliers giving 6.5 at home to your Orlando Magic.
I feel like this is a Kyrie Irving 40-point game.
There's no one can guard him.
No.
So he's at home.
Yeah.
He's right there.
Yeah.
I feel like this is one where various members of the media would say that I'm nuts because I'm like, you know, I might flip over to this for a little bit just because I'm like, you know what? Tristan Thompson versus Nikolai Vucevic. Like, Vucevic. Yeah, I can get into that.
Kyrie's must watch for me.
Yeah.
He's entered that territory where he is not the traditional point guard in the sense of, like, I don't think he's that good of like a floor general in terms of dishing out the ball. Like he's not as bad as numbers, but it's just he leaves you wanting a little bit more. But he also doesn't have a lot of weapons to pass to, and he is not a defender. They hide him on defense, but he is so damn good shooting the ball and scoring the ball that you have to watch him. He's entered that territory.
Over under LeBron 7.5 rebounds tonight.
Oh, over.
Easy on that one.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Nationally
televised game. I think he's flirting with a triple double.
That'll be interesting. I mean, he's worth the price of admission, regardless of whoever else plays.
Yep.
So come over the weekend. Let's see. You've got something coming up, don't you?
I'll have something on the Knicks tomorrow.
Yeah, you have something on the Knicks tomorrow. What four point play? Or Friday 5, rather, with Ken Berger. Got some trade questions in there. Got a lot of stuff on trades. I know you guys love that stuff, so go ahead and check it out on the blog. What else we got going on? Sunday, there's some big games. We'll be checking those out. And then
week before All-Star, or the week of All-Star.
All-Star break. We're going to have a lot of stuff on All-Star next week. We're going to have some great coverage. Zach and Royce will be on the ground in Houston while I down 1,700 Red Bulls and try and keep track of everything else on my own.
And we get to hang out with Ken Berger.
And you get to hang out with Ken, who's a lot of fun to hang out with and eats very healthy.
So yeah.
You don't go to dinner with him.
All right.
But, have a great weekend, Zach.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Matt.